We will be looking at Numbers 32, and I want to share with you a story. When I was a young man, I played baseball, okay? One of my many regrets, but, you know, so I did what I did. And I played baseball up until I got to ninth grade. I played baseball every year. My dad would sign me up, and sometimes he would coach my teams. And then when I got to high school, to ninth grade, I told my parents that I no longer wanted to play baseball. Broke the news to them. I do not want to play baseball anymore. See, I had been for a year or two prior to that, spending a lot of time with my older cousins. They had been taking me out to parties and such. Even as a junior high student, I was not saved. I was not raised in a Christian home. And I was hanging out with them. They spent a lot of time living with us because, you know how we Hispanic families are. We just move everybody in. And so I had become very close to them. And when I got to high school, I said, you know, I do not want to do baseball anymore. I just want to kind of cruise through high school. Don't really want to, you know, focus on anything and want to just kind of, you know, I'd like to really develop this party thing, you know. Seems like a promising lifestyle. And that decision to do that, to stop playing baseball, to not go out for the team, was the beginning, really, of the downfall for me. You know, throughout my high school years, my grades just really took a dive because I had really no reason to keep them up. Fast forward to my senior year, by the time I graduated on all D's except for an A. I had an A in Mrs. Philbeck's English class, and that's because it was freshman English that I was retaking because I had flunked it the first time. And I'll just remind you right now that I'm your high school student's pastor. Yeah. I got saved when I was 20 years old, but I made that decision. It was based on ease, comfort. I did not want to put forth the effort to try to join this new high school team or try to get in with the jocks. I was already set up with my cousins in the school, and they had their friends, and so I just kind of went that way. And really, it was a bad decision. The story that we have before us here in Numbers 32 involves a group of people who are making a bad decision. In Numbers 32, just to give you a quick background, and we'll talk a little bit more about this. By the time we get to Numbers 32, this is a story that began really back in Genesis, obviously. But in Exodus, God used a man named Moses to rescue these people, the Jews, the Israelites, the children of Israel, from slavery in Egypt. Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and on into Deuteronomy, and then on into Joshua. I mean, it's all the story of God rescuing his people and taking them to a place called the Promised Land. Now, the people that we are dealing with right now, this is the second generation. Here's what I mean. The first generation came out of Egypt. God led them out of Egypt, saved them from Egypt. And he told them, I'm going to take you to the Promised Land. This is a land, he said, God described it this way, as a land flowing with milk and honey. It's got everything that you need. It was a few days' journey from Egypt. God led them there to the border. They got to a place called Kadesh Barnea. And they decided at that point, we don't really know if God is trustworthy or not. You know, he said a land flowing with milk and honey, but, I mean, is that really what he meant? And so they decided to send spies into the land. And they decided at that point, and we'll talk about some more of these details in a few minutes, but they decided at that point, no, this is not the land for us. And so what God told them at that time was, you are not going to trust me and go into the Promised Land, so instead what you are going to do is, I'm going to march you around the wilderness, the desert, for 40 years until all of you die off, and then your kids and your grandkids, I will take them into the Promised Land. So that second group of people, those kids, those grandkids, that younger generation, they are now 40 years older, and they are getting ready to go into the promised land. At this point, Moses has already been told by God, you are not going into the promised land. I'm going to use a young man, maybe not so young anymore at this point, but I'm going to use a man named Joshua, who's going to lead them into the promised land. And so he's now dealing with this second group of people. And in our first main division, we see this request. That's the first main division, request. It says in verse 1, now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad. I thought you said it was the children of Israel. It is. But within the children of Israel, there were different tribes or families. And these are two of the tribes or families, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad. Now, Reuben and Gad were the sons, they were alive a long time ago. And they have now passed on. This is their family, obviously. And these two tribes or families, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad, had a very great multitude of livestock. And when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that indeed the region was a place for livestock, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spoke to Moses, to Eleazar the priest, and to the leaders of the congregation, saying, Ataroth, which is not one of the planets in Star Wars, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Elealeh, Shebam, Nebo, and Bayon. I have no idea if I pronounced those right, but I did it with authority, so you believe me. Verse 4 says, the country which the Lord defeated before the congregation of Israel is a land for livestock, and your servants have livestock. Therefore, they said in verse 5, if we have found favor in your sight, let this land be given to your servants as a possession. Do not take us over the Jordan. So they are requesting that they not be taken over the Jordan. They are on the east side of the Jordan at this point. They're getting ready to cross over the Jordan into the promised land, the west side of the Jordan. And now they're saying, let's pump the brakes here. We do not want to go in. Do not make us go into the promised land. But the promised land is where God had told them to go into. God had said it's all set up there. Go there. But now they're saying, we do not want to go in there. Their request, we see back in verse 1, is motivated by sight. Look at verse 1 once again. Now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of livestock. They had a bunch of animals. And when they, here it is, it's a dangerous little word, it's only three letters. When they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that indeed it was a region for livestock, a place for livestock. Their request, their decision really is motivated by sight. Now, there is a problem with that right away. You and I are familiar with 2 Corinthians 5, 7. Yes, church? 2 Corinthians 5, 7, for we walk by faith, not by sight. These individuals, Reuben and Gad, they've got this backward. They're doing it the wrong way. They are walking by sight and not by faith. And this is going to create problems and drama for them. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a while. But I want you to see that as they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that indeed the region was a place for livestock. They are basing this decision, this request, to want to stay out of the promised land, to not go all the way in, to not make a full commitment, based on what they see, and what they see is a good place for their animals. Now, I have to be careful, church, because our society is crazy about our pets, aren't we? We love our pets. And I know why. This is going to sound like I'm joking, but I'm not joking. This is not meant to be funny, but I know why so many of us, or I should say so many of you, I've got pets. I've got dogs. I do not like any of them, but I've got them. People are crazy about their pets. I know why. This is going to, again, it's going to sound, I'm not trying to make funny or light of it, but it is because people, our family members, our friends, People are nasty. And they're hateful, and angry, and impatient, and hurtful. And those cute little pets and lap dogs and cats and whatever else, seemingly they love us unconditionally, don't they? And so we love our pets. We will buy strollers for our pets. And backpacks. And little side bags. And we will take them everywhere that we go because they do not treat us badly. I get it. I get it. I understand. But you and I are understanding already here that there's something wrong with this decision. They're basing their decision to not enter into God's promised land based on what they saw because it was a good place for their animals. And in verse 2, we read that the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spoke to Moses, to Eleazar the priest, and to the leaders of the congregation. And they named all of these places in verse 3, Ataroth and Dibon and these other places. And I want you to see what they do in verse 4. They say the country, talking about all of these areas, the country which the Lord defeated before the congregation of Israel. This is what is called in parenthood. This is called sweet talking. Okay? Some of you young people in here, you know how to do it very well. Right? You know how to do it really well. Oh, but let me give you my reason for it, and I want you to see what they say. Verse 3, they name all the places, and then they say to Moses and to the leaders, verse 4, the country which the Lord defeated before the congregation of Israel. In other words, we're making this request. We want to do such and such, and obviously the Lord is in it because he defeated all of these people. Essentially, he prepared it for us. So, I mean, it just seems right that we should be here. You see what they did there? They brought the Lord in on their decision. On this request. Well, listen, God must be in it. He defeated these people. In verse 5, they said, or rather, the rest of verse 4, that it is a land for livestock and your servants have livestock. Now, here's the second thing that they did in trying to sweet talk. We're your servants. We're your servants. The Lord's in it, and we're your servants. Family, help me out. Does a servant have any rights? Mm-mm. And yet, we're your servants, but we want to do something different than what you want to do. Huh. We see right away that the attitude of their heart, the attitude of their mind is, it's they do not have a servant's heart. What they're doing, again, this is sweet talking 101. Oh, but Dad, I promise, I'll mow the lawn when I get back. Obviously, the Lord wants me to do such and such. They're trying to sweet talk. If, in verse 5, if we have found favor in your sight, if we're favorable in your sight, then let your servants take possession of this. And then at the end of verse 5, do not take us over the Jordan. Do you understand, family? We're going to see it again. It's going to become clear that they have already made their decision. Let's move into our second main division. We've seen the request motivated by sight. Now we are going to see responses. And the first response is from Moses. And what Moses is going to start with is a reminder. He's going to say, remember. Look at verse 6. Read the story with me. And Moses said to the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war while you sit here? Now, why will you discourage the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord has given them? Thus your fathers did when I sent them away from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel so that they did not go into the land which the Lord had given them. So the Lord's anger was aroused on that day, and he swore an oath, saying, surely None of the men who came up from Egypt from 20 years old and above shall see the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun, for they have wholly followed the Lord. So the Lord's anger was aroused against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years until all that generation that had done evil in the sight of the Lord was gone. So he reminds them of their history. They had forgotten history, and we all know that those who forget history are doomed to repeat it, right? They had forgotten their history. And so Moses, and he will finish rebuking them here in just a moment, but what he's doing is, first of all, he is reminding them. This is what happened. Now, let me just remind you real quickly, in case you're not familiar with the story of the 12 spies. Okay, it's a wonderful story. And what happened was, 40 years prior, they had gotten to the border of the Promised Land. And then they decided, we're not sure if God's really telling the truth, if he's accurate when he says a land flowing with milk and honey. I mean, what does that really mean? And so they decided to send 12 spies in to double check God. They went in, they came back out a month later. And they said, man, the land is flowing with milk and honey. It's exactly what God said it was. And the people said, great, let's go in. And 10 of the 12 spies said, pump the brakes, we cannot go in the land. You said it was a beautiful, it is. They brought back grapes. The bunch of grapes was so large that they had to fasten it to a stick and carry it between two of the men. They said, the land is flowing with milk and honey. Everything that we need is there, except there are giants in the land. And we're like insects. We're like grasshoppers to these guys. There's no way that we can defeat these people. We cannot go in. And two of those 12 spies said, no, we can go in. We have to go in. God said that we can go in. God is going to give us the strength and what we need to defeat these giants or anybody else. Those two guys, Joshua and Caleb. The argument became so fierce that they wanted to kill Joshua and Caleb. This is what we call mob mentality. Okay? I call it mall mentality. Wherever everyone's going, that's where we want to be. Whatever everyone is doing, let's do that. Back in December, my wife and I were at the mall in San Bernardino. Beautiful San Bernardino. If you ever are looking for a place to vacation, I can share some great spots with you. We went into the mall in San Bernardino. You said, man, that's your first mistake. We went to the mall in San Bernardino and we walked into JCPenney. JCPenney. And we went in and I saw a friend of mine in there, him and his mom. And I said, hey, there's, you know, so-and-so. And I went to go talk to him and my wife said, okay, I'm going to go this way and go look. And my friend and I were talking, maybe a minute. And then we hear some commotion. I look, and there are people running towards me. Women crying. People dragging their kids out of the mall. And I'm looking, and you know, this is Pastor Chris. Everybody's running towards me, and I go, where's everybody going? And then someone said, there's an active shooter in the mall. So I did this. I don't hear anything. And people running by crying. And I was, and my friend and I are standing there talking. And then I said, okay, well, I guess I should probably go then, I guess. But I don't hear anything. I'm not running. If I don't know what I'm running from, I'm not running. And then I said, I guess we should go. And I said, where's my wife at? And then I heard, Chris, Chris. And I look over at the door. She was already outside. And then I just walk on out. Because in my mind, man, that's mob mentality. I don't know what they're doing. What are we even running from? Come to find out there actually was a shooter. It was on the other end of the mall. So come to San Bernardino. shop, get a corn dog, see some action. But these 12 spies, the 10 came back and said, mob mentality, no way we can go in there. No way. And the two said, we got to go in. That's what God told us to do. But everybody was swayed, of course, by the 10. And so at that point, God says, you're not going to live by faith. You're going to live by fear. Then you won't go into the promised land at all. I'm going to march you around until all of you are dead, and then I will use your sons and your daughters, and I'll take them in. So Moses reminds them of this first. Listen, this is what happened in the past. He moves from this reminder to this rebuke in verses 14 and 15, where it says, and look, Moses still speaking, you have risen in your father's place, a brood of sinful men, to increase still more the fierce anger of the Lord against Israel. For if you turn away from following him, he will once again leave them in the wilderness, and you will destroy all these people. Don't do it. We get now the response from Reuben and Gad. In verse 16, we get their reason. And I want you to see what they do. Reuben and Gad. Then they, that's the families of Reuben and Gad, then they came near to him. Now I know what's going on, family. Earlier, they tried to sweet talk Moses. Well, you know, the Lord must be in this because he defeated these people. And we're your servants. Did you see what they did in verse 16? They came near to Moses. I'm a dad. I know what's up. No, you cannot do such and such. Oh, but dad. No. Don't get close to me. Back up. They are trying to sweet talk Moses, drawing in close to him, and we're your servants, and God must be in this thing. And notice what they say in verse 16. Then they came near to him and said, we will build sheepfolds here for our livestock and cities for our what? Cities for our little ones. Family. Why did it take this group of people 16 verses to think about their children? 16 verses. When they first came at Moses, what did they say? They said, this is a great place. We saw a great place for our livestock, for our animals. It was not until verse 16, after mentioning their livestock again, that they say, oh yeah, by the way, we have kids. Priorities. Priorities, family. The children of Reuben and Gad, the priorities are mixed up. So they say in verse 16, what we will do is we will build sheepfolds here for our livestock and cities for our little ones. Verse 17, but we ourselves will be armed, ready to go before the children of Israel until we have brought them to their place, and our little ones will dwell in the fortified cities because of the inhabitants of the land. We will not return to our homes until every one of the children of Israel has received his inheritance. Verse 19, for we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this eastern side of the Jordan. Family, do you understand in verse 19 what they just said, what they just revealed? Look at verse 19 again. For we will not inherit with them on the other side of the Jordan and beyond, because our inheritance has fallen to us on this eastern side of the Jordan. Does it sound to you like this decision is up for consideration? They said, the Lord's in it. We are your servants. And now we find out in verse 19, we're not going over because we're already set up over here. You see, in their minds, and more importantly and more dangerously in their hearts, they were already on the east side of the Jordan set up, and they were not making a full commitment to the Lord by crossing over the Jordan. They had already decided. Bringing it to Moses, to the leaders, to Eleazar, that was all just lip service. That was all just talk, sweet talk. In their hearts, they have already decided not to fully commit and obey God by going into the promised land. Now, if you were here on Wednesday night, you heard our pastor study through Hebrews chapter 3 and 4. And you have some understanding of this passage. That what these people were in fact saying was, we do not want to enter into God's rest. We'd rather go with our own plan and stay out here on the east side of the Jordan. For we walk by faith, not by sight. The children of Reuben and Gad would have switched it around, for we walk by sight and not by faith. I want you to understand something. Think back with me. Do you remember Moses when he spoke to them? What did he tell them first? He reminded them about their history. Yes, church? Yes. He dealt with the past. He talked about the present. But then he also talked about the future. If you do this thing, here is what's going to happen. The children of Reuben and Gad, what did they talk about? They talked about what was in the immediate, in the present. See, that is the difference between walking by faith and walking by sight. Moses, because he walked by faith, it broadened his vision so that he could see the past, the present, and the future. The children of Reuben and Gad, because they walked by sight, it narrowed their vision. It limited their vision, church. And all they could see was the present. That was it. And so all of their decisions at this point are based on only what is in the present. Because Moses is walking by faith, he's got this broad vision. He can see the beginning from the end. When you and I walk by faith, it broadens our vision. But when you and I walk by sight, it limits our vision. Along with that limited vision, as we begin to make decisions based on only what we can see in the immediate, comes all sorts of problems. What you and I do not get in this story, you do not get it until 2 Kings chapter 15, many years later. By that point, the children of Israel have been disobedient. And God himself brings in a group of people called the Assyrians to take captive, to attack and take captive the children of Israel. I want you, family, to take a wild guess as to which tribes were taken captive first. Anybody? Reuben? And Gad. Because when you and I do not make that full commitment, follow through on that full commitment, when you and I are not in faith, but when we are on the fringe, we are easily accessible to the enemy. We lack the protection of being where God wants us to be, making that full commitment, and being in the middle of His will. When you and I are hanging out on the fringe, doing our own thing, making decisions based only on what I see, I'm in a dangerous position. We're very familiar with that. If you've been walking with Christ for some time, you know that. There's been a time in your life, a point in your life, where you were on the fringe. You knew God wanted you to do something, but you didn't step out in faith and do it. and you were easily picked off. You and I understand that. You and I must be sure that we have made our full commitment to the Lord. I'm not talking about being saved all over again. I'm talking about you gave your life to God. Why in the world are you trying to take it back and make your own decisions? I have said this many times from this pulpit. I say the same thing to your high school students. If I gave my life, that's what we say, I gave my life to the Lord, surrendered my life to the Lord, pray tell me, why am I then trying to make my own decisions? If I am a servant, then my life is not my own. My life is God's, and let God direct me. 5 years ago, I got a call from our pastor. I've known our pastor for many, many years. We've served together for many years. And he called me up and said, Chris, I'd like to meet with you and talk to you. And he said, listen, down at Revival, we need another youth pastor. Our youth pastor is leaving. And I would like for you to prayerfully consider coming to Revival to be a youth pastor, because I had been a youth pastor with him years prior to that in beautiful Calvary San Bernardino. And I said, I certainly will pray about that, absolutely. And he knew about it, and my pastor then at Calvary San Bernardino knew about it, because they're actually related. I don't know if you knew that. Actually related. And so we knew about it. I went home, and I sat my family down. I said, we need to have a meeting. We sat down, and I said to my family, listen, I'm about to lay something on you. And I shared with them this possible opportunity, what our pastor had said to me, what he had offered, what he had asked. And I said to my family in that little living room there in my home, I said, listen, what I'm going to share with you, I want you to pray about it. I do not want your opinion. I know that sounds harsh, family, but I do not want your opinion. You see, years prior to that, when I was just a young man, now I did things backward. I wasn't doing things right when I was a younger man. And my first daughter was born out of wedlock. And we got married soon after that. And we moved into my family's house, my family's house. And it was not a bad decision. I didn't have a penny to my name. And we moved in there into a tiny little room. And from the day that I moved in there, all I could think about was getting out. Not because I disliked my family. I did not. They were very supportive, very helpful. And they allowed me to live there rent-free because they saw my heart change. There was a real drastic change. And I had surrendered my life to Christ at that point. And I was able to save up money so that I could eventually move out. But I made a huge mistake. I had a cousin that was living up in Washington. And he called me and said, look, I know that you are needing a job, or not a job, I know that you're looking for a place to live, and here's what we got going on. The apartment's where I live, he said. They're looking for a maintenance man, and you get an apartment along with that. I said, man, sounds like it's from the Lord. And what I did was, I said, well, let me think about that for a little bit, and I'll get back to you. And he said, that's fine. And so then what I did was, I went as fast as I could and started asking everybody's opinion. My pastor, friends at church, people that I worked with, everybody that I could talk to, hey, do you think I should go? Do you think I should stay? I do not know how many people I talked to, family, but As many people as I talked to, I got that many opinions. And my mind was swirling. And I found myself just seeing, I did not know what to do. And one night, I was at a church. The church that I attended at that time was Calvary Chapel, Colton. It was about half the size of one of these sections right here. And I was there on a Wednesday night, sat down, and my pastor Mario opened up the Bible and he began to teach, and then all of a sudden, boom. From the scriptures, God spoke to my heart and said, you're not going anywhere, buddy, you stay right here. Not going to Washington. And suddenly peace flooded over my heart and my mind. And I looked around like, man, did anybody else hear that? Nobody else heard it. God was using His Word in that moment to speak to me. Not in a voice that I could hear. Speaking to my heart, impressing it on my heart. And so, fast forward to 5 years ago, when I sat down with my family and said, listen, I'm going to share something with you. I do not want your opinion. Now you understand why I said that. I had learned my lesson, family. I do not need anyone's opinion. All I wanted to know was, what does God want? That's it. I did not ask John, how much am I going to make? How big is the youth group? What kind of budget do I have? Do I have my own high school room? None of those things mattered, family. It did not matter. None of those things mattered until I knew what God's will was. So you and I, we need to find out what God's will is and then do that and do not do anything else until you do that. There is one sure way to settle for less than God's best. It happens in two steps. If I want to settle for less than what God has for me, I need to first of all formulate my own plan without consulting God. Secondly, I must follow through by faith in my own plan and faith in my own resources. George MacDonald said, in whatever man does without God, he must fail miserably or succeed more miserably. Because you see, if I work something out, if I formulate my own plan and I follow through by faith in myself and in my plan and in my own resources, and it seems to work out just fine, I go, oh man, that worked out pretty well. God, I do not need you on the next one. And I begin to push God, and I begin to isolate Him, and I begin to isolate myself from God. If I want to settle for less than God's best, I need to formulate my own plan without consulting God. And then secondly, I need to follow through on that plan by faith in myself and in my own resources. However, church, if you and I want to experience God's best, I must first of all find out what God's plan is. That's tough. Because that means that I have to stop what I am doing. We're Southern California, right? We H-U-S-T-L-E, man. We got to make the money. Because we got to pay for these houses and for this gas and for these cars and this insurance and these kids and these dogs and everything else. And now you're telling me that I got to stop and wait on God. You need to find out. Family, if you want to experience God's best, then you need to find out what God's plan is. And secondly, follow through by faith in His plan and in His resources. As long as you and I hover in that formulating my own plan area and following through on my own plan, by faith in myself, I am never going to experience all that God wants me to experience. And so 5 years ago, I went to a men's retreat with Calvary San Bernardino and Revival. And Pastor Jerry walked in, and he opened up his Bible to the book of Matthew. And in Matthew, Jesus said, listen, disciples, leave your nets, leave it all, and come follow me. And again, God spoke to my heart, and I looked around. It's like, did anybody else hear that? Again, from the Scriptures. Do you understand what I'm telling you, church? Years prior, when God had spoken to me and said, do not go to Washington, it was through His what? His Word. 5 years ago, when God spoke to me again and said, get yourself to Revival, it was through His what? And it was after a time of waiting, family, and praying and seeking God and waiting well right where I was at. I'm going to give you some questions. These are questions that you can use as you are making decisions for the future. Number one, have I prayed about this? Oh, you pastors, always telling us to pray and read our Bible. Why? Because that's how God works. We seek Him. He speaks to us through what He's spoken, right? Isn't that what our pastor always tells us? Yes? Secondly, have I received scriptural confirmation? Thirdly, is this comfortable for me? And if so, is that good? Number four, will getting what I want be God's best for me? Number five, what are the possible long-term results from this choice? Bible commentator Merrill Unger said how easy it is for God's people to get so near to what God's purpose, what is God's purpose for them, and yet be diverted from it by what is expedient from a worldly standpoint. Especially is this true of the good and providentially advantageous things of this life that in themselves are by the mercy of God, but which, if we settle down in them, become the good that is the enemy of the best that God has for us. Some of us right now are in the middle of trying to make a decision. And we are trying to make that decision apart from God. I'm begging you. Do you want to experience God's best? Not your best. Not what your family thinks is best. But do you want to experience God's best? What it is going to require is that you seek the Lord. And then once He gives you some confirmation and says, this is what I want you to do, do that and don't do anything else until you do that. This is it. I do not have anything else. All I have is what God wants to do. That's it. I got nothing else. Family, outside of this, I don't really know. I know how to fix sprinklers. I know how to work on bikes a little bit. That's it. All I got is this. This is all I need. I just want to be right where God wants me to be. That's it. When I'm there, I experience His peace, His leading, His protection, all of those things. You and I need to find out where God wants us and then be there. Some of us this morning, you're fighting. You're fighting God. God's already impressing something on your heart, family, and you have been fighting Him. And this morning, God is telling you, stop. Stop. Cross the Jordan. Go into the promised land. I have great things for you there. Is the land good for what you want to use it for? Sure it is. But I got something better.